This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to Beyond the Noise, the podcast series from PR Week. I'm Frankie Oliver, your host and founder of New Society. And today I am joined by PR Week UK editor John Harrington. Hi, John.
Hi, Frankie.
And our special guest, Zoe Cohen from Just Stop Oil. Hello, Zoe.
Hi, Frankie. Hi, John.
Hi.
Well, there seemed to be no better time to invite Zoe onto the show, given the many tumultuous events we have experienced over the last few weeks. As the climate crisis really does take hold around the world with daily reports of extreme wildfires and floods. The head of the UN, Antonio Guterres, has said that we have now moved from global warming to global boiling as oceans also reach record temperatures. Meanwhile, the UK has granted 100 new oil and gas licences, which goes against the advice from the Independent Energy Association, the leading energy body that is itself funded by the fossil fuel industry. And of course, there is just ongoing polarisation and culture wars in the media and especially the tabloids about the ULEZ expansion and the cost of going net zero. So, Zoe, there's clearly quite a lot to talk about. But firstly, we just wanted to take a step back and really just try and understand a little bit more about Just Stop Oil, how it was formed, who runs it, and how your communications function works.
Yeah, well, thanks both for having me on. As you say, there's been a lot to take in recently, and that's not going to change anytime soon as we know it. Yeah, the campaign Just Stop Oil was launched on Valentine's Day, 14th of February last year, 2022, with the clear and sole demand that the UK government end all licensing consents for oil, gas and coal in the UK. So basically an end to all new fossil fuel projects. So just to clarify for anyone listening, because a lot of the media quite like to get confused, perhaps on purpose, about this, to give the impression that Just Stop Oil is demanding that all the taps are turned off. That's just wrong and nonsense. The demand is for no new taps to be built. You know, metaphorically, our bath is completely overflowing with emissions. That's why we're in, one main reason we're in the utter desperate situation we're in. So we're saying, you know, don't build new taps because the taps are already overflowing.
Sure.
So that's the demand. So the campaign's been going for about 18 months now and made absolutely incredible progress. And in terms of who, it's a bunch of, a pretty small bunch, really, of ordinary people. From, you know, age 18 to 80, within the campaign. I think it's actually greater than that. I think it's from age 15 to 90 odd. But, a group of ordinary people, is essentially what the campaign is made up of, working really hard, on a complete shoestring, and showing that when humans come together with passion, shared purpose, and not a profit motive, they can do incredible things.
And understanding, because it's fascinating, I'm sure, for people inside the PR industry, sort of come from quite traditional structures, you know, how does your communications function work? Is there a PR team? Is it a permanent PR team? Are they volunteers? How is that? I mean, obviously, you don't need to reveal what you don't want to, but how does that function? Who is there 24/7 monitoring the media, fielding the spokespeople, setting up the key messages, briefing people in advance? I mean, it is just a massive job, isn't it? So who are the invisible army, effectively?
Yeah. Obviously, I'm not going to talk about people because it's a group of ordinary people, a small group of ordinary people within the wider campaign.
Are they typically communications people or
not necessarily? No, I think it's a real mix. Some people have learned on the job in the campaign. Others have got learned on the job in other campaigns and are applying that learning. Other people have got a bit of background. It's a whole mix. And you know what the team and sub teams are kind of joined together in is an absolute. Commitment to work together in a super constructive, super hard way to fundamentally fight what is the most profitable and greedy industry that humanity has ever had. You know, that's what this tiny group of people in the Just Stop Oil campaign, as one of the movements within the movement of movements in the civil resistance world in the UK,
sure.
And beyond. You know, it's really a David and Goliath battle, isn't it?
Yeah. So quite a small team delivering quite a lot of work, it sounds like.
Absolutely.
I think it'd be really good for our listeners to also understand, I mean, the terms theory of change, you and I will know well, but really, I suppose, for the comms community, this is really kind of understanding what Just Stop Oil's strategy effectively is. And I think, you know, NVDA, non-violent direct action, which sits at the heart of your theory of change and your strategy. It would be great if you could give us a bit of an overview of why you think that strategy is going to work.
Okay, thanks, Frankie. So social history tells us that all of our privileges that we benefit from, whether it is, you know, the right to vote for everyone apart from landed gentry who were male, which is obviously what used to be in this country. So all our right to vote, our right to annual leave, to the weekend, any attempt at equal pay, equal marriage rights, so LGBTQ folk, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. History tells us that social change comes from people stepping up. It comes from ordinary people coming together and doing, taking action, disruptive action, very much, you know, usually nonviolent. And the research shows that nonviolent action is more successful than action that is violent. And also, you know, morally and ethically, as a movement within the wider climate movement in the UK and internationally, we're completely nonviolent movement. So everyone who takes action with Just Stop Oil does a nonviolence training to make sure that they understand the theory and practice of nonviolence and are able to maintain nonviolence in the face of significant challenges that do occur on an increasingly regular basis, I guess, when one is taking action. So the coming back to the theory, I think we are not taught, funnily enough, in our schooling and college and university education that this is what history actually is. You know, we're not taught that our privileges come from ordinary people pushing back against power and against the elites, but that's where they do come from. We kind of fed a little bit of a sanitized version. You know, power does not give way or give concessions without a fight, and a peaceful fight is usually more effective. And I guess the other side of the coin, really, Frankie, is that we, you know, anyone who vaguely follows the climate agenda and the history of action, or rather complete lack of action globally and nationally, knows that we're coming up to COP28, aren't we? So we know 30 plus years of the COPs, and in the time that we've had COPs, which are the Conference of the Parties, the name given to the international global huge conference jamborees around climate and theoretically trying to do something about it. In that time, emissions have doubled. So, you know, it's all been a complete and utter failure. I think it's hard to describe it in any other way. So we know, and many of us, not all of us by any means, but many of us who've been part of, whether it's in Extinction Rebellion, Inch Lake Britain, Just Stop Oil, and other civil resistance movements, have been at this one way or the other for many, many years. So I myself have, you know, taken all sorts of, you know, legal and polite actions for many years, and they don't do anything. You know, that it's incrementalism, and we are not working in a system that's actually incremental. You know, we are in a time of accelerating consequences. As Antonio Guterres and many others point to, and the world's, you know, world leading scientists, etc. So incrementalism is irresponsible and scientifically and historically illiterate. So we need to take action which is a proportionate nonviolent struggle in the face of what we're facing. So and frankly, you know, it works. it works. That's why, or it has a better chance of working than pretty much any other kind of action.
I guess the sort of counterpoint to that, when we say it works, I mean, obviously there was the news last week about the 100 new oil licenses. I mean, isn't that an argument to say it's not working, that the governments are sort of ploughing on regardless? How would you sort of respond to that?
Yeah. I would say that it's really important to step back a little bit and look at the whole. So when we do that, we see that, you know, within I think a year or less of the campaign starting, the opposition parties and the Scottish government and the Welsh Parliament were all on board with, in one way or other, to differing degrees, no new fossil fuel licences. So all the political parties and the Welsh and Scottish governments on board with effectively the demand, all except the Tories. So the Tories are like the extreme outliers, really, and they're looking and sounding and acting more and more extreme, aren't they? So we're in a David and Goliath situation here, aren't we? The oil companies own our government. They own many governments around the world. You know, that there's so much evidence, and I'm sure you guys know it, and hopefully many listeners know it. One piece of evidence is that, you know, the Conservative Party got £3.5 million donations from the oil companies, the polluters and the climate deniers, just last year alone.
And there's also proven to be a huge amount of money going into political lobbying and a huge amount of lobbyists that are at the COP conferences and so forth. So I think that story is definitely coming to
mind. I think we do need to point out that no one from the government is here to sort of counteract this. So, you know, as a caveat, just to say, you know.
Yeah, come on, John. I hear that, but quite frankly, they're criminals. They are clearly criminals. And I have absolutely no qualms using that word. I'm sure, because you've already mentioned Antonio Guterres earlier, Frankie, another quote from, I think, last year, wasn't it? It might have even been 2021 now, to be honest, that the dangerous radicals, you know, that climate activists are often painted to be dangerous radicals, but the real dangerous radicals are those in governments and elsewhere who are opening new oil and gas. I mean, you know, slightly paraphrased Antonio Guterres there, but that's effectively the case. And to proceed with new oil and gas licences is obviously horrific criminality in the face of reality that we know about. But coming back to I think you said, you know, is this a success? I mean, you know, nothing. Social change in complex human systems is a complex, messy process. And as I said, power does not give in or does not give concessions without a battle. And I'm sure you've heard the kind of line around, first they ignore you, then they laugh at you, then they fight you, then you win. Which I think is attributed to Gandhi. Forgive me, I can't remember if Gandhi actually said it or someone else said it now, but it's often attributed to Gandhi. But that process is a kind of familiar process. And we've gone past the ignored and being laughed at, and I think we're now in the fight phase, aren't we? So that was always going to be expected, to be honest. But actually the pushing back is a sign of impact, Frankie. I think it's really important to see this for what it is. If the campaign was not being impactful, there would be no pushback from the government. So this is impact. It's having enormous impact. You know, front page after front page, hundreds of media interviews, the sort of brand recognition that corporates would have to pay huge money for. And, you know, we don't have huge money. We are ordinary people. We don't get to have lunch with number 10, every other day like the oil companies do. We aren't lobbyists. We don't have that sort of money. We're ordinary people trying to defend life. So we have no other choice. We have to do it this way.
For a lot of people, Just Stop Oil will be synonymous with what they see on social media and what they see on TV in terms of the disruption, the sort of disruption to roads, the kind of protests and disruption at sporting events and so on, and at art galleries. I'm sure you've been asked this question many times, but I think it's one that's worth asking again. I mean, do you have any sympathy with the argument that those sorts of tactics are alienating the public and are actually being counterproductive?
No, in short, John. There is very little evidence for this in practice. It's not about being popular. Again, if we take a look at social history and movements over time that have been, you know, movements of ordinary people standing up and non-violently fighting for our rights in all sorts of ways. They have never been popular at the time, but are frequently viewed differently through the lens of history. So we're not trying to be popular. We're not trying to be elected. As I said, supporters of Just Stop Oil, ordinary people from teenagers through to great-grandmothers and great-grandfathers have taken action on the streets or in sporting events day after day, week after week, and it's created front-page stories day after day and many and hundreds of interviews. We've got a moral duty to get the greatest threat to humanity and to society in the media day after day, because government, oil companies, corporations, banks, main media outlets are all failing to ensure that people understand the real threat that we're facing, the catastrophic, irreversible, horrific threat. And we're being lied to on a daily basis by those in power, aren't we? I mean, the lies that Rishi Sunak and Grant Shapps-Mothers are pumping out about, energy security and North Sea oil and gas are just are gobsmacking, really. So, but coming back to your point, there is no evidence that of what is often talked about. So obviously it's not pleasant to be caught up in disruption, but we have to put that in perspective. The proportion of people in this country who have experienced any significant disruption is tiny. I know you guys are based in London. I am not, but I do know London reasonably well. There's 60,000 roads in Greater London, I believe. And, quite frankly, a lot of them run pretty slowly a lot of the time, don't they? So a slight slowing of traffic for an extra 20 minutes or something really makes very, very little difference, especially when we always let blue light vehicles through, contrary to a lot of the misinformation that's spread. But it's really important, as I said, to take a step back. And there's something called the radical flank effect. So campaigns like Just Stop Oil use civil resistance approaches because they work. We haven't got time to use anything that doesn't work. And it's given we are in last chance saloon as humanity, it's morally wrong to use anything that doesn't have at least some chance of possibly making a difference. So that's why we do it. And there is research, there's plenty of research evidence that talks about things like the radical flank effect, which shows that when organisations, when movements, campaigns like Just Stop Oil, Extinction Rebellion and others take action which is seen as relatively radical, it opens up the space. So people listening within your business, I don't know, you may be familiar with the whole Overton window, you know, that zone of acceptable narrative, zone of acceptable debate, which is crucial to social change. We open that up, and actually what happens is others move into that more moderate space, because the conversation becomes more and more normalized, and the support for more moderate organizations, whether that's Friends of the Earth, Greenpeace, whatever, that goes up. Not only that, but the proportion of people, albeit potentially small, the people who are prepared to actually, you know, come on the road or take nonviolent direct action increases as well. Statistically, there's work done by the Social Change Lab on that, as well as in literature reviews and so on. So supporters of Just Stop Oil and others in the, you know, the wider civil resistance movement, we do what we do because it's morally right to do things that potentially have a chance of succeeding, and we do it because it works.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So that's why
I've seen all that, the social change research, and, you know, very much understand the theory around what the radical flank needs to do alongside more moderate campaigns and brands. It makes real sense. I suppose one of the challenges might be, if I think I saw some research that you shared on LinkedIn around, I think it was from Bristol University, about sort of over 80% of the public didn't agree with Just Stop Oil's actions. And I suppose you're saying it kind of doesn't matter because the radical flank has this role to play. I suppose the other flip side of looking at that, and this is meant in a completely constructive debate, the other flip side of that is if you look at around theories of social change, that, you know, potentially we need 25% of sort of public support to be able to create the kind of social, the radical social tipping point that we need to be able to drive the kind of action that we need. There's sort of a question, isn't there, which is you carry on doing what you're doing, and actually the radical flank plays that critical role. I suppose there's also a very big blank space potentially there right now where you know, governments aren't acting on Article 12 of the Paris Treaty to educate, engage, empower, invite participation in policy. The public, you know, I've seen so much research around the public feeling really helpless. Sort of, they know the problem is there. They can now see it with their own eyes, but they feel helpless. They don't actually even know how we're going to just stop oil. And actually starting to flip into maybe some of the narratives that might be really helpful for the public to understand the sorts of policies that will enable us to just stop oil. So, for example, you know, do we need a carbon tax? Do we need a, you know, House of Citizens that will support political reform? All of these sorts of things. And I know that these are ideas that are out in the public domain. They just start to shift the conversation from just stop oil to these are the things that we actually need our governments to act on. And these are the glimmers of hope. These are the things that we can hold on to that will actually help us to drive the change. I was just really interested in your view on that.
Yeah, thanks, Frankie. Oh gosh, lots to say. We could definitely have a longer podcast or a part two on all of this. So one thing just to say is that I think it's really important, and you sort of mentioned this, but I think just to be really clear for everyone listening, is that there's a difference between, you know, in that's whatever that polling was, forgive me, I can't remember the exact research showing, you know,
the Bristol University research.
Yeah, the Bristol Uni one, saying 80% of people don't like Just Stop Oil. That's fine. That's not a problem. 20% of people do. That's cool. Okay. What there is no evidence of, and I can't emphasize this enough, is that there is absolutely no evidence of non-violent direct action, civil resistance actions, putting people off climate action.
Yeah.
So we don't need people to like the supporters of Just Stop Oil.
Yeah.
What we need to do is push the conversation, the conversation that we need to be talking about, into the media, into people's homes, workplaces, etc., on a daily basis, and causing those conversations to happen. That's what needs to happen. And that's what the campaign has been incredibly successful at. And these things get conflated often on purpose. You may have heard them in some of the right-wing interviews, which, let's face it, is most of our media in this country, who conflate all of this. You know, that you don't have any support. People don't want to do action, don't want to take action because you're putting people off. That's just so much rubbish. It's not giving, there's no evidence for it, and it's not giving the citizens of this country any credit for being able to discern the difference between the actions that Just Stop Oil takes and the reality of the poly crisis that we're in. You know, people can tell the difference and they know it full well. They might not, they may well not like us, but they absolutely understand that they understand and are concerned about and want more action, as you've alluded to. So I think understanding those two things as two separate things is really, really important. My heart lifted when you talked about the House of Representatives, or the House of Citizens, rather. We absolutely need deliberative democracy. And Just Stop Oil was, alongside Extinction Rebellion and 200 other organisations, were on the streets of London back in April for the big one. Don't know if you were there at all for the 4 days.
I was.
It was a beautiful, wonderful, joyous event. It was stewarding marches and all sorts of things, as well as doing a bit of spokeswork. And 100,000 people, more than 100,000 people on the streets over the course of the 4 days. Absolutely beautiful, really wonderful, family friendly and inclusive events. All of those organisations, part of that, were demanding no new fossil fuel projects, and also were coming together to demand a legally binding citizens' assembly. So we do absolutely need both of those things, and we need them more than ever in the face of the government lies, failures, corruption, which are just coming to the surface on a daily basis now, aren't they? So absolutely, at citizens' assemblies, deliberative democracy, people in power who look and sound like all of us, you know, 50% women, how great would that be? The 1% being 1%, not most of our government. You know, these are wonderful, wonderful opportunities to have real democracy in this country, and they are desperately, desperately needed. I would trust a group of citizens chosen by Sortition to represent the whole beautiful diversity of the UK. I would trust that group to make much, much better decisions than the people in power. But we mustn't forget, Frankie, we need to come back to, we have not yet achieved an end to new oil and gas licenses. You know, it's really important to say that. So I agree there are all sorts of conversations to be had, but let's not take our eye off this very important ball, that we need to end new oil and gas. You know, of course, it's not the only thing that needs to happen, but not building new taps, not expanding the system when the bath is already more than overflowing is crucial. And we have to drive an end to new fossil fuel licenses. You know, it's one of the many things that needs to happen, and it's a crucial, crucial thing that needs to happen. So
I'm in total support of that. I suppose what I'm just thinking about more broadly is, you're obviously doing such a brilliant job of getting onto the media and driving the conversation. It's just that, as we know, the conversation is potentially multi-layered and potentially complex, but also could be incredibly simple in terms of really helping the public to understand what's needed beyond the oil and gas licenses. Like, how do we actually reduce our demand? Well, potentially, how do we make this a fair and just transition? If we're dealing with culture wars around ULEZ, for example, how is the government actually going to solve that? Well, if we look at the UK Citizens' Assembly that did happen, you know, what did the public vote for in that Citizens' Assembly? The people asked to be educated, to be invited in to participate on policy, and they resoundingly said the polluter must pay. It's through taxation that actually the public will be able to have their homes decarbonised, that they can afford to switch to an electric car, that they'll have cheaper, transport, for example. And I think it might be a way to sort of end some of the polarization that potentially the culture wars that are happening? Because I think, I'm going to guess here, but I feel like there's been such a shift listening to some of the TV presenters that have been interviewing you, where they've actually been saying, we want this to work, but we feel like it's not working. So how could it work better? How could you be there more for the people to deliver messages that will enable them to really understand and feel empowered and be able to talk to their friends and family about what needs to happen?
Okay. Gosh, we definitely need a part two to this podcast. There's so much more to talk about. So let's do a part two.
And it might be that you say, that's not our role. But yeah.
Well, I want to come back to that. Yeah. So one thing. There's so much to say. Really importantly, there's a really really important message that your lovely selves and everyone listening to this podcast need to take on board is that, you know, in 2023 it is time to pick a side, and if we are not taking action ourselves or supporting those who take action, the sort of action that's really going to push meaningful change at political and systemic level, then, you know, we're going to struggle to look our kids in the eye in the coming months and years ahead. This is, I think, what can often happen, and you may have noticed this, Frankie, because you're clearly a very keen observer of what's going on, and I'm really appreciating that, is that what can often happen is this kind of psychological dynamic where all the onus gets projected onto us. You know, we're a few hundred ordinary people. We'd like to obviously be thousands and thousands of ordinary people, and then we'd get the demand met a lot quicker.
Your brand effectively is disproportionate to the number of people. Your impact, your profile is disproportionate to the size of the organisation.
The impact is astonishingly effective, and huge credit to everyone involved in the entire movement, the mass majority of whom are volunteers and, you know, all runs on a shoestring. So what I guess I'm also saying is that, you know, if people are listening and are concerned about the catastrophic worsening of our living world, then they need to get involved and they need to step up and come on the roads. So, and also I would flip back. Yes, there are lots of conversations that are needed. And, you know, personally, you know, kind of outside of my direct work with Just Stop Oil, et cetera, I'm also a huge passionate supporter of managed degrowth. I think, you know, we need managed equitable degrowth policies, of which there are many, and we need deliberative democracy. And, but we also need to not take our eye off the ball of some of the core things that need to change. And there are lots of conversations that need to happen. So I kind of want to reflect this back to the PR industry, really, in that, you know, a what if question, you know, a what if the combined might and talent and experience and expertise of PR Week, even PR Week alone, but imagine the whole PR industry was actually turned towards seeking to support life rather than support a system which is destroying life. You know, what could that be like? You know, I don't know how many people work in the whole PR industry in the UK or globally, presumably thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands. And
a lot.
If that's combined, a lot. Even if half of that combined energy and talent and expertise and know-how could actually be turned to try to support the living world, to support humanity, so that those alive now and children, grandchildren and the rest of the living world had a potential chance at surviving beyond the next couple of decades, which isn't looking good at the moment. You know, I really want to put that back to everyone listening. It's all of our responsibilities. I think there's a psychological thing, a psychological defence about this stuff getting projected back onto those people who take action and cause disruption, because it's like part of the kind of denial thing, isn't it? About, oh, it's not my responsibility. Well, it's everyone's responsibility. If we're an adult and we're alive now, it's all of our responsibility to act.
With that in mind, one question we did want to ask is, have you considered opening up your brief to the PR industry? You know, a lot of PR agencies work with not-for-profit and charities and campaign groups, you know, sometimes on a pro bono basis and so on. I mean, is that the sort of thing you'd think to do, maybe?
Yeah, I mean, I'm interested that the language, I found it when you mentioned that question, is a bit like, ooh, the brief. I suppose I don't really think
Fair enough. It's quite an industry specific, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I would say it's not really a brief. Like, it's not about our message, as in just Up Oil's message, or our objective, or just another campaign. You know, what we're talking about is everything, everywhere, forever. So I think it's very much about kind of acknowledging reality and deciding on what side of history we want to be on and taking action accordingly. So it's, you know, I don't think that, well, I would hope that PR professionals, you know, the human beings who do a job that's called PR in this world that we're in, don't need a brief to tell the truth, don't need a brief to challenge people in their day jobs about what their organization's working on. And we just need love and we need courage.
I'm going to challenge you there a bit, Zoe, just on that, because I think, you know, I have walked away from my traditional corporate PR job and moved heavily into climate communications over the last 3 years, right? It's so complex. There are so many evidence points. There are so many theories of change. There are so many ways of coming at it. And actually, that in itself is half the problem in the climate comms world, right? And actually, the simplicity of the brief is, and the asking of the industry to respond to the brief, I think is actually an incredibly powerful thing for Just Up Oil to be thinking about, because agencies do respond to briefs and the quality of that brief with creative ideas against some very strict criteria that you may also want, you know, to agree. Because like just going, oh, what's our creative idea to save the world? I mean, that could go in so many different directions, and actually having that narrow focus. And you don't have to. It was just that really interesting idea of like, there's all this creative, amazing talent. If everybody's in the media kind of going, actually, Just Stop Oil, we don't like their tactics, we don't know what they're doing, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, well, let's throw it back to the creative industries. What do you think? And it would just potentially be an incredibly fertile ground that also would engage people in the industry and potentially just provide different perspectives and new creative ideas that hopefully are helpful.
Absolutely. Yeah. I guess I hear you. I do hear you. And of course, whether that's on an individual level, if there are individual people listening, you think, actually, I'd like to volunteer some of my time to work, to support in some way, then, you know, we'd love to hear from you. And if there are organisations listening who want to have a conversation, like, come and talk to us, right? Just come and talk to us. There are, I'm sure, I suppose, and also take action without, you don't even need to, you know, it's obvious that we need to end all new fossil fuel projects. It isn't even our demand, is it? As I'm sure you know, it's what needs to have been happening since more than 2 years ago now, whether it's the International Energy Agency, the, you know, UN, the BMA, those, so many organisations agree that we need to end all new fossil fuel projects. So there's nothing to stop any PR professional or any PR company just, you know, taking that as a brief off their own bat. I think that's what I'm trying to get across, really, Frankie. No one needs permission to do that. I think that's something that, it's a cultural thing I had to learn or relearn or unlearn when becoming part of the civil resistance community back in 2019, when I first became part of Extinction Rebellion. It's like, we don't need to ask permission to do these things. We can just do them. And I really want to honour what you said about you've changed direction in your career. Absolutely, me too. And honouring all those people who have taken big career changes and taken risks with that. And that's great. And also, I'm aware that through the work that the Clean Creatives have done, there's this F list, isn't there, of agencies who work with the big polluters and the oil companies and so on. And that's a long list. And it's heinous what they do, isn't it? I mean, they really, you know, I'm sure you may be aware that Just Up Oil campaign came out with a statement about 3 or 4 weeks ago now, saying that we're beginning work with legal firms helping to collate the evidence of crimes against humanity by those who engage in new oil and gas or enable new oil and gas. So that is obviously includes the oil companies themselves, but also governments.
Was this part of the Good Law Project? Was this the, because there was obviously the...
Not specifically. No. It was an announcement by Just Up Oil supporters back about a month ago.
Okay.
So, you know, we're going to be collaborating with others and also with the colleagues in certain law firms to collate this evidence, because as you can imagine, you know, there's lots of climate litigation already, but it's only going one way in terms of climate litigation, isn't it? So whether it's law firms who themselves work on behalf of major polluters, whether it's you know, PR companies who are greenwashing crimes against humanity and genocide and ecocide, you know, these people need to be held to account. So this is really, really important stuff to talk about. We must acknowledge that and keep talking about it.
So, Zoe, that brings us to the end of this week's show with an absolutely massive subject that I think we had to skirt across quite a few big issues. But, you know, thank you so much for joining us and taking the time out on your holiday. We really appreciate it. And, you know, thank you so much to everybody that's been listening to the show. And, you know, we hope you've learned a lot about climate communication, and we'll really look forward to joining us next time.
Hey, marketers, advertisers, and business owners. Find yourself chatting up the same audience in the same places, using the same old lines? Maybe it's time to podcast the net further to catch your next customer. With Acast, there's plenty of fish in the sea with more than 100,000 podcasts and millions of listeners. So there's a perfect match for every business. Use our ad platform to cast your net, then narrow down using targeting such as demographic, show categories, audience segments, and more. Find your match, then reel them in. Advertise on more than 100,000 podcasts with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.